and our love of freedom. Hold a veil over our eyes. Rights that are given can be taken away. Just a few on this boat. It shouldn't be that hard. Just a few honest words is all I need. We don't choose our leaders. They choose themselves. Tell me about democracy.
Good morning.
And good morning. It is, oh, look at that, 8:24 in the morning. And you are listening to Positively Revolting in the greater Cascadia area on your very own community radio station, KBOO. Many of you have chosen to make it your own this morning by joining us at 503-232-8818. It is so fabulous to see this stream of support roaring in on this, the penultimate day of our winter membership drive.
And a favorite day, News and Public Affairs Day.
That's right. Until 8 o'clock this evening, we'll be looking at public affairs all day long, some very special programming and lectures slated for you throughout the day. And Lynn and I are extremely happy to be rolling into that this morning. I'm Ani, by the way.
And I'm Lynn. And by the way, that was Ben Salee, A Few Honest Words from his album Learning to Bend. And just to remind folks, we have an email address now for you to ask questions with, called positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Use it.
Indeed, indeed, it's true. And we have with us by phone, we're very excited that Mickey Huff is with us. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We're very glad to have you. And we are here to discuss the importance of free press and stories that have been buried and censored in the corporate-owned media. We thank you very much for joining us. Mickey Huff is the director of Project Censored and the Media Freedom Foundation and an associate professor of history at Diablo Valley College. So let's just jump straight into things, as our time has been somewhat curtailed.
Curtailed for a good cause.
Good service, I can imagine, I have to say.
I was being censored by Amy Goodman.
She's like that.
Filibustered.
Oh, my gosh.
Filibustered by Amy. That's great stuff.
She is.
Mike, your producer or board op Mike in there. that I was being filibustered. That's good for you. I hope in 2 weeks when we're doing our fun drive at KPFA, former director Peter Phillips and I have a show on there, The Morning Mix, on Thursdays. And so I'm hoping that Amy Goodman will spill over.
Yeah, right. We should all be so lucky. Well, we're thrilled that we have the time with you that we do. And I do want to talk about your new show, actually, on KPFA coming right up. But first, a little background information for folks that might not be so familiar. Can you give us an overview of the work of Project Censored? It was founded 35 years ago. Can you let our listeners know about the scope of work you do?
Sure. Project Censored we've been around for 35 years. We were originally founded at Sonoma State University in 1976 by a former journalist and then communications professor, Dr. Carl Jensen. Jensen ran the project for 20 years, taken over by Peter Phillips, a sociologist at Sonoma State, and I became director last year. But the genesis of the project, for people that don't know, oh, by the way, you can go to projectcensored.org online, and you can see all of our archive stories back to 1976 and a lot more, and you can find out more about us on our Facebook page and so on. But what we do is we survey the so-called mainstream. We don't call it that. We call it the corporate media, because that's what it is. The most ubiquitous and easily accessible for most people is the corporate media. There's nothing mainstream about the elite-owned, top-down, managed news propaganda that passes for news in this country. And it's actually gotten worse, ironically, over the years, despite new technologies, even though there are now new outlets for people to get information, which is a very good thing. Going back to 1976, Jensen asked the question about the 1972 election because he was looking backwards and saying, well, how could Nixon possibly have won with such a landslide, given Watergate and given all the things that were going on? And he went and looked back and found that the corporate media wasn't really covering any of that stuff when it was really important. When it may have changed an outcome of an election. Of course, that's speculation. But nevertheless, Jensen's question, a valid one, was that, well, why does it take so long, or why are some things not reported? And he wanted to look into that. So that's how the project started, was looking at what the media are covering and are not covering and why. And it was a student research project. In fact, now we have over 30 colleges and universities around the U.S. helping do research and submit stories with us, and we're in about 10 different countries. So we've grown a great deal since Carl's first questions about media censorship. And, of course, Peter Phillips, who was director for 14 years, continued and expanded, and we've been doing one book per year since 1993, and our publisher is Seven Stories Press out of New York. So that's in a nutshell of what we do. I can talk more about methodology or any of the other things you want, but I know you're pitching, so I'll just let you take it from there.
Well, I had a question that with the plethora of material that is out there, how do you all pick your stories, the ones that go in the book?
That's a great question. Students, of course, are originally, I know some people don't remember this, before the days of the Internet.
I do.
Yeah, of course I do, too.
I mean, yes, in my wheelchair.
I did all my college and graduate work without the magical interwebs.
The interwebs, yes. All of them.
Yeah, but students would survey alternative or independent media, the non-corporate media. And we also, of course, accept nominations once upon a time by mail, now, of course, through ProjectCensor.org. All of your listeners can nominate stories that they see places in independent alternative-type media, non-corporate media, that they see as A, seemingly factually supported, transparently sourced, has views, facts, or views and perspectives or facts that are not covered or undercovered or significantly distorted by corporate media outlets. And then what happens is we research them. Students research them in LexisNexis or ProQuest databases to find out where has this story been covered. So they have to make logs about all that, and then they have to go to a community evaluator, a professor, or someone in the community that is expert in the field that the story discusses to have an overlook. So it's sort of like it's not a peer review per se, like a three-panel thing, but it certainly is a review process that goes on. And then the story gets put into the till for the annual book cycle. Those are all published year-round now, however, at MediaFreedomInternational.org. So you can go and look at the stories that we have nominated and are in the process of creating this validated independent news. That's the process it goes through, where it's surveyed, it's researched, it's looked over. And eventually the judges are our judges, professors, media scholars, etc., professor and student participants in the project select those stories every year. Quite frankly, I mean, just on the record to say, the selection process and the ranking process, to me, is a little more arbitrary. I think all of the stories that we see here have merit, significance, and importance, and that's why we want to put all of them out there for people to pay attention to.
Right, and if you had a book that large, who could carry it?
Well, our publishers were Seven Stories Press are a great bunch of people, and our main editor, Veronica, God bless her if there is a God, 480 pages in the censored 2011 volume. So I got a little cross-continent from New York wagging of the finger. We can't do books like this big, per se. You're right. There's sadly too many things that are not being addressed, not being covered, and perspectives that are very important to our culture, to our society, that one assumes in a free press system, they assume they get that information and that news at the outlets they go to, the most ubiquitously viewed, the corporate news media. But as we just heard Amy Goodman saying again and again and again, that this isn't the case. We need to be the media. We need to support community media. We need to support community radio. We need to be active participants, not only in the acquisition of information, but in the reporting of information that mobilizes us to action in a democratic society in meaningful ways, to right the wrongs we see and to seek social justice among all of us, not just if something doesn't seem to be happening to me personally, but I think we really need to raise, you know, we all rise up when the tide rises, and the information tide is out there. We just have to access it.
You know, it is Positively Revolting's birthday today. I realized 17 years ago we started this program.
Thanks for inviting me to the birthday party.
By all means.
That's a great thing. Happy birthday to Positively Revolting. That's a wonderful thing to celebrate, and no better way to celebrate that for you up in Portland. I'm in the Bay Area down here, but no better way to celebrate it than have people call in and support community radio, you know, to paraphrase that show you may or may not like about your fine city, the dream of community radio is alive in Portland.
That's right. So true.
You know, some towns, if you'll go across the United States, there are many, many places that do not have a resource like KBOO. And people in Portland, I think, are aware of the resources they have. It's very important to support those while you have them.
So, yeah, for sure.
Because when they go away, they leave a really big vacuum.
Yeah, and we would never want to see that. I mean, actually, I think a lot of Portland's unique culture stems from the fact that we have been around for 42 years broadcasting independent thought and widening public discourse, because that's what we do here at Community Radio. Yeah. I want to remind folks you are listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
Lynn's right here. We have Mickey Huff online with us from Project Censored. Let's look at Project Censored 2011. There's a couple, all 25 stories each and every year just sort of grab me and blow me away, even though I follow news and, you know, usually most of the time I've heard of at least most of them, if not followed many of them myself. But there's always a couple that just to see them starkly in print kind of makes you go, but wait, I was told succinctly that this is not the case. One of those is the U.S. funding and supporting the Taliban. According to popular rumor, the U.S. is fighting the Taliban, right?
Story number 10 this year. So, yes. You know, historically, this is such a pattern in U.S. foreign policy where the popular or public view is a simplified black, white, us, them type scenario. But the reality of the policy is usually far more convoluted. You know, whether you want to go back and look at early U.S. support for the Nazis in Germany,
mm-hmm.
or you look at the playing of both sides in the Iran-Iraq wars. Our history is replete with these kind of absurd examples. This story, U.S. funds and supports the Taliban. There was Aram Rostin in The Nation and Ahmad Kalush. Taiwan News was writing about these stories. And this is, of course, U.S. taxpayer money paying members of the Taliban, right? So it's mixing the pot here of this volatile environment in Afghanistan. Private contractors are paying insurgents for safety, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we saw this in Baghdad, in parts of Iraq, where, you know, shiploads of shrink-wrapped cash somehow went missing.
Went missing, right.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people forget those stories. Some of the most ludicrous and amazing tales of just the recent past fall into the memory hole. Where we are right now, I mean, I'm sure, I know the Bay Area, there are communities that could use pallets of shrink-wrapped $100 bills for their schools, for their roads, for people to pay rent and mortgage and prevent foreclosures. I know Portland is the same, sadly, across this nation. Things are that way, let alone most other parts of the world.
So $9 billion would go pretty far, wouldn't it?
Yeah, whenever we hear stories like this, it's baffling on so many levels. It's sort of, if you have to pay these people to be nice, couldn't you just send them a check from home? save
right.
the trouble, bring everybody home, use the resources here, these kind of things. But sadly, we don't see that. You know, and by the way, again, your listeners can see these stories online at projectcensored.org. But the reason I want to tell people again to consider pledging for the book, obviously, first is to support KBOO. But the other is there's so much more in the book. We have a truth emergency section that talks about state crimes against democracy, that talks about the failures of media in the lead up to the Iraq war, the ongoing blackout of what happens in Palestine. we have a Project Censored International section of the book this year that looks at international issues, the use of educational institutions to help not reform the media, but be the media and present factual and accurate information to the public so they can do things about it. So the book has a lot more information in it than just the top 25 stories. Of course, we have the deja vu, what's happened to past stories, junk food news, right? Last year was the year of the tiger. This is the year of the hare, so we'll see what happens there. Last year was the year of the tiger and the year of Tiger Woods, of course.
Right.
Tiger's harem, the overturned truck, what happened, what will happen next, will he golf again? All of this just claptrap that fills the airwaves while we have a whole book full of meaningful stories that are not getting any attention.
Stories like nanoparticles posing serious DNA risks to humans and the environments, yet these are ubiquitous in cosmetics and many other products.
Yeah, and, you know, people wonder, you know, about cancers and these kind of things. Oh, you know, you get Western medical system, you go to the doctor and say, "Ooh, I have cancer." Oh, come down with a case of cancer. We don't know where that came from, but let's, you know, immediately move on to try to treat this and so forth. Again, you go and you look at the history of nanoparticles and the history of chemicals and environmental degradation and so on and its impact on health issues. It's significant. And we have a story number two this year on the U.S. Pentagon and military apparatus being the largest polluter on the planet.
Right.
All the disease and destruction they leave behind for other peoples around the world. It's really just sadly riveting. It's negatively revolting,
indeed,
to be quite honest with you.
Well, you know, so we have these important sort of life-changing stories of really global import. And then we have Tiger Woods, Woolly Golf again. And we see which one gets more headlines. Why?
Well, you know, the folks that quote-unquote own the media, the corporate elite, they claim that this is what the people want. They claim, and when they go and testify and do hearings in Washington about this kind of stuff and communications policy, they're like, well, our job is just to deliver to the public what we think they need to hear. And again, that's nonsense, because if you look at study after study and poll after poll, it's not that Americans don't like being distracted or don't like entertainment, but they also do like news and often would prefer their news without the crap, so to speak.
Right.
There is a desire to have accuracy and this kind of thing. You know, you take a look at some of the ratings of these shows that masquerade as journalistic exposés, whether it be the O'Reilly Factor or principally Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity. A lot of their ratings have been plummeting. They've not only been losing advertiser sponsors, but many listeners or so-called followers, because, again, the corporate media people are following the money trails. And if vitriol and insanity raises enough money, they have no ethical qualms with allowing Glenn Beck to cast veiled death threats or not-so-veiled threats of people. You know, this kind of thing is technically illegal, and things should be done about it, and that's not what we should tolerate in our media. We should not tolerate these types of things. We see people all the world over, particularly right now throughout parts of the Middle East and Northern Africa, they are not tolerating things like, they're not tolerating injustices anymore. And in America, you know, again, we do have this pacification disengagement problem. And a lot of it is really fed by media. It's deeper than that, but we need an active interface with media. We need a media that people can, talk through, not just have a media that talks at the public. And again, that's what's so important about community media, community radio, and so forth, is we really invite people into the dialogue and into the discussion. And that's what we need if we're going to face, you know, the obstacles before us right now. And we can only do it with factual and accurate information to empower each other.
Mickey, before we asked Dave and Teresa to talk to us about supporting the station, I had left you with that question of people are very, very intrigued, very excited and concerned about the unfolding going on in Egypt right now. As a purveyor of media information, how does one in this country stay informed or best informed of things happening around the world?
we need to go to the people that are there on the ground and in the great blackout of media. I mean, we do see great resources like Amy Goodman having people on the ground that can report back. We have countless other resources that are available, European media, Al Jazeera in particular, Al Jazeera English. There are these sources that are not part of the corporate media cabal in the United States that do report these types of things happening the world over. In fact, on our ProjectCensored.org website, on the right side, there is a list of links of our blogs and other websites. One of them says daily independent news feeds that we trust. And you go there, and it lists many different independent websites and radio and these types of things with daily RSS feeds. There's more news, independent news stories on this page in a day than you'll see in the New York Times. So it's an invitation to people to discover more about independent media and to look outside the corporate box for news and information, because it is available and it is out there, but you're going to find it at places like KABU. You're going to find it online, of course, with people like Amy Goodman, Democracy Now! You'll find it with the Pacifica radio stations oftentimes. So there are places that people can go, and that's, in fact, one of the most repeated or oft-heard questions when we go around. You know, even when we were at Powell's over a year ago, you know, again, I remember people there asking, you know, we did a KABU benefit, in fact, there. And again, people ask, well, where do we go? What do we do? And what we have to do is support each other. We have to share our sources with each other. We can go to censorednews.org as a place to splash down and give these kinds of resources to our friends and community members that, you know, they haven't turned off the TV yet. You know, they just don't know. And when you talk to them, they kind of look at you sideways, and they say, what do you mean? What is the true cost of Chevron? Or they say, what do you mean Obama's charter school policies spread segregation and undermine unions? And why does that matter if that's the case? We're not going to hear that kind of stuff from the corporate media. We need to look at the alternative sources. And again, ProjectCensored.org has a list of these. For $75, your listeners can get autographed copies of Censored 2011. And I know Peter Phillips and I will definitely be coming back to Portland sometime, and we'd love to meet more KABU listeners.
Wonderful. Mickey, thank you so very much for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting on our very special birthday show at the end of our winter membership drive. We'd love to hear from you again soon. Keep up the great work.
Please call on us. We are very happy to work together with you. So thanks, Ani and Lynn. Thanks, everybody at KABU, and keep up the great work, and happy birthday.
Thanks.